And now, live from the Hackensack Meridian Health Stage 17, high above Madison Square Garden at the OG Podcast Network Studios, in the center of the universe, New York City, it's the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour, starring Rob Bartlett and the Robbio Radio Comedy Players, with Steve Mecca and a band to be named later, and special guest star from 77 WABC Radio's Bernie and Sid Show, Mr. Sid Rosenberg. But now, please welcome your host, Rob Bartlett.
For joining us here in our live studio audience. Give yourselves a round of applause. And thank those of you who are watching us live, streaming on Facebook.com/Robbio Radio. And for those of you who might be checking us out the day after on iTunes or Google Play or the OG Podcast Network or the YouTube channel, which we just started. So there are many ways you can enjoy this fabulous program, but we're glad you're here tonight. First, let's say hello to our musical director and resident dreamboat, Mr. Steve Mecca, and a band to be named later. Steve will be on a little later to do his killer Ron Howard impersonation once again. I mean, I swear, you close your eyes, and I swear, you'll think you just went blind and somebody who sounds like Ron Howard came into the room. Two, three. We talked about this! Let's welcome our cast, ladies and gentlemen. Let's meet our cast. Please welcome a man who needs no introduction, formerly from Saturday Night Live, Mr. Andrew Smith. Yeah. New York theater actress, writer, producer, and star of the short film The Weight of a Feather, Ms. Whitney Johnson. From the national tours of A Chorus Line, Guys and Dolls, and White Christmas, the woman with the pelvic floor of steel, Alyssa Alter. Yeah. You know, Alyssa, I just had my pelvic floor rejuvenated.
What?
Yes, yes, I put down linoleum. Award-winning comedic actress, musical theater veteran, star of Next to Normal on the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, Band-Aid spokesperson, Ms. Mandy Lee Penny. Direct from the national tour of Phantom of the Opera, where he flies in every Monday to do the show. He came in from Salt Lake City. I kid you not. Flew in on the red eye this morning at 6 a.m. He is on the national tour of Phantom of the Opera, starring in the role of the wind-up cymbal-playing monkey, Mr. Constantine Pappas. And, of course, last but certainly not least, our resident Renaissance woman and spiritual leader, actress, writer, singer, dancer, cookie and puppy enthusiast, the one, the only, except no substitutes, Miss Megan Samart. We got a great show for you tonight. We're very, very excited. It's a very special night because we have a very special guest star. He's the star of WABC's Bernie and Sid in the Morning Show. Please welcome Sid Rosenberg.
Good, nice to be here.
Good,
thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing the show.
Listen, I don't want to be a pain in the neck, okay? But let me ask you something.
Yeah?
That dressing room we were in before the Saw Tonight show, is that the same dressing room you go take all the guest stars to?
Well, no, actually, Sid, you're the first.
I kind of figured that because the place is a hole.
I'm sorry.
I mean, it's not very comfortable. The couch is understuffed. The lighting is harsh. I don't want to nitpick, but the backstage hospitality is somewhat lacking. I mean, I'm a guest. You put nothing out. How about a bowl of M&M's, a Fresca? Did my agent send over my rider to you?
Well, no, actually, your agent didn't send over right.
I'm supposed to have a bucket filled with a bottle of Italian mineral water, chilled to precisely 39 degrees Fahrenheit, a tub of roasted garlic hummus with whole wheat matcha crackers arranged in a pinwheel pattern on a blue china plate, a chicken parm hero, some grilled calamari, and some M-Drive washed down with a nice Brooklyn egg cream.
Okay. I'm sure it's there by now, so why don't you go get ready and prepare for your big comedy debut.
I'll do that. But if the mineral water is 1 degree above 39 Fahrenheit, Rob, you and I, we're going to have a big problem.
Sid Rosenberg, everyone! Sid will be back later on the show. He is starring in our headline segment this evening, which is a parody of ESPN's 30-30. So stick around for that, because it's a really funny, funny show.
Someone's at the door.
Who could it be?
Hello, everyone.
It's Yoko. Yoko Ono, everyone.
Hello. Hello. Yes, it's me in person once again. I like to stop by unannounced sometimes.
Yeah, so we've noticed.
Well, you're always welcome here, Yoko.
It's an honor to have you here.
I know. I just wanted to drop by and tell you all I have just recorded a new single. It's the theme song to your program.
Get out of here.
Really?
Get out of here.
Believe me.
No, I mean get out of here, lady. You creep me out.
Whitney, ixnay on the 8 hay of the Okoye. She was married to an Edel Bay.
Can you sing a little bit for us, Yoko?
Oh, of course. Thank you for asking me, Lisa.
Thanks. Oh, you don't want to do the whole thing. You want people to buy the record.
Oh, that's a very good point, Martha.
How about a haiku? Do you have a haiku for us?
You mean the ancient Japanese minimalist poetry style of blank verse consisting of three lines totaling 17 syllables, five syllables followed by seven syllables followed by five syllables?
Yes, that is the one. You are the haiku master. Wish I could do it.
Well, you just did. Count them up, Conway.
Wow, I guess I did.
Please do one for us, Yoko.
Okay, if you insist. This is one about the motivation behind the choices we make as human beings. What drives us, what makes us do what we do. The primal instinct that moves us forward in the universe. You know, all that existential crap. This haiku poem answers the timeless question of why.
What's it called?
Why.
What? Well, I just want to know.
Well, no, that's the title of the poem. Why? Third base. I love Rob Bartlett, but I'm only here tonight for Sid Rosenberg.
Yoko, that's genius.
Yoko Ono, everybody.
Woo! Yeah.
What do I say? What do I say every week? That's precision. That's craft.
That's right.
That's like a
master class.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I was just about to say that, Alyssa. You know, those are very big now, online master classes. There's a whole series of them that you can take from people who are masters in their respective fields, like Gordon Ramsay teaches cooking, David Mamet teaches playwriting, Steve Martin teaches stand-up comedy, and Ron Howard teaches directing.
Hi, I'm Ron Howard. You might know me as the Academy Award-winning director of such films as Splash, Parenthood, and Apollo 13.
Meet your new instructor.
I'm always driven by story, like it's the chauffeur of my limo. It drives me through the movie.
Ron Howard, Oscar-winning director of A Beautiful Mind and The Da Vinci Code, brings you his first ever online class.
We all understand stories. It makes us believe we can all direct. But here's the thing. You can't. But I can.
Ron Howard shares his nearly 60 years of experience in Hollywood with you and a once-in-a-lifetime online opportunity to take a master class from the master.
We all have our own instincts. It's just that yours are all wrong.
Ron Howard gives you step-by-step instruction on how to film a scene, how to light it, how to shoot it, how to edit it, and how to make money off it. Lots of money off it.
If I learned anything in my years in Hollywood, It's that you can't just shoot a movie without actors. Because without actors, you just have words on a page. Which is not a movie. That's called a book.
Go on set with Ron Howard as he directs a scene and shows you how he works with actors.
And action!
Spencer, why didn't you tell me you were thinking of leaving? After 15 years, don't you think at least you owed me that?
And cut! That was great, but I want to go again. Do you mind? I want you to try a little something for me.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I want you to concentrate on your breath. Bring it up from your chest into your head. And exhale through your eyes.
My eyes?
Yes. And then breathe in through them. It clears the vision so you can see where you're going with your character.
Oh, okay.
Ron Howard teaches you the inside tricks of the trade.
Anybody can be an actor. Not everybody can be a director. But I am. And you can be one too. But only if you take my Ron Howard's masterclass.
Ron Howard gives you tips on casting, cinematography, production design, how to evaluate a screenplay.
When I'm looking at a script, I want to break it down into its barest essentials. So I take a Sharpie and cross out all the prepositions from the script. And then I read it from the last page backwards, like it was written in Hebrew. Then, if I can still understand the story, then I know there's a script that I can take a journey with.
Ron Howard will teach you all about story.
They say there are only 7 stories, but I think there's really only one, and it's this. You're an accountant, and I'm the Academy Award-winning director of Cocoon and Cinderella Man and Far and Away. But you can be the director of your own film one day. That is, if you take my Ron Howard's masterclass.
Call the number on your screen and receive a free solo director's cut DVD. In fact, you can have as many as you want. He's got tons of them.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how big your crew is or how talented your actors are. If you want to make a masterpiece, take a master class with the master, me, Ron Howard, and my Ron Howard's master class. So get out your MasterCard.
I have to read a disclaimer here. Not an accredited educational institution or affiliated with the University of Phoenix. Master class enrollment does not guarantee professional employment in the associated field. So I guess just because you take the Ron Howard master class, it doesn't mean you're actually going to become a successful Hollywood director, which is kind of what I thought when I took the Marc Maron podcast master class.
And what I thought when I took the astrophysics master class from Dr. Michio Kaku.
You mean Dr. Michio Kaku?
That's what I said, Rob. I didn't get a job as an astrophysicist.
Gee, imagine that. That must have been what Constantine thought when he took the How to Do a Russian Accent masterclass.
What do you mean, Rob?
Okay, all right. I have to explain. Last week, we started a new Death Can Kill series. It's our takeoff on, you know, WNPR's Serial and Dateline. It's following a serial murder at an Elvis impersonator convention in Vegas. And Constantine is playing a Russian Elvis impersonator, and he didn't do quite as good a Russian accent as, oh, let's say, Yakov Smirnov. In America, you watch Big Brother. In Soviet Russia, Big Brother watch you. Yakov Smirnov. I laughed until I stopped. And I'm not a laugher. Anyway, Constantine's had a week to practice, so hopefully this week it will be brilliant. So here is episode 2 of Death Can Kill, Deader Than Elvis. Last week we learned that no less than 4 Elvis impersonators had suddenly been murdered at a Las Vegas Elvis impersonator convention. Definitely not a good sign for this jumpsuit summit. The police had no suspects, and the few witnesses who had come forward could only describe a person who possibly resembled Elvis. Not a lot of help at a convention of 500 lookalikes. Las Vegas Police Detective Bobby T. Higgins.
I guess you could say we had nothing shaken. The last dead Elvis was found wearing a pair of blue suede shoes that had belonged to Elvis, a female impersonator. Sorry, I mean a female Elvis impersonator. There's a difference, I guess, but I still don't see it.
It really creeped me out. And you gotta understand, I spend most of my adult life dressed like a fat dead guy in a jumpsuit, so it takes a lot to creep me out. But whoever had killed that nice Vegas Elvis had been in my room and abused my blue suede shoes. I don't wanna say how. Let me just put it this way. He did more than just step on him. Know what I'm saying? But Vegas Elvis doesn't even wear blue suede shoes. He wears white leather boots. So I thought maybe the real murderer wasn't an Elvis impersonator after all. Maybe it was somebody normal. If you can call somebody who kills Elvis impersonators normal.
With no new leads in the case, Detective Higgins was desperate. She was grasping at straws, sort of like Elvis looked like when he did those phony karate moves on stage. Only thinner.
I called for a lineup, but it proved nothing. Even I couldn't tell the difference. But one of those clowns was a killer. And I wasn't talking about a Jerry Lee Lewis impersonator either. Or even a Jerry Lewis Lee Lewis impersonator.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire! Lady!
There was definitely a serial murderer loose in Vegas. And impersonators were dropping like those cheap scarves Elvis used to give away after wiping his sweat on them. I never got that. Gross.
The convention was extended in order to keep all the impersonators in town. No Elvises had left the building. But that only seemed to encourage the killer.
When you come across a dead body in this business, your first instinct is to say, this person is dead. But in this case, when I was called to the kitchen at the Marrakesh Hotel and saw that this particular dead body had been drowned in thick pork gravy, I thought, well, you can kiss that jumpsuit goodbye. Then I thought, what special kind of idiot dresses up like Elvis when there's a serial killer out there looking to kill anything in a jumpsuit and sideburns? Why not switch to Michael Jackson?
Marrakesh Casino Hospitality Director Connie Chambers.
The Elvis people were fit to be tied. Oh, we do that on occasion, but only if the guests ask for it. Then a few of the guys wanted to honor the victims of the murders, so they decided to impersonate them. Suddenly, overnight, the hotel was crawling with not only Elvis impersonators, but Elvis impersonator impersonators. It was very confusing.
I was in my hotel room that morning practicing my guitar and my lip curl, and then I got hungry, so I ordered room service. Fried peanut butter, banana sandwich, side of gravy fries, fifth of Old Crow, and a tub of Rocky Road, and a spoon. It was Elvis' favorite breakfast. About 20 minutes later, knock on the door. There's an Elvis impersonator with the service cart, and he's got a knife in his back, man. I didn't know what to do, so I called room service back to tell him he was dead. And also, they forgot to send the gravy fries. Then I had breakfast, but I had to take the knife out of the dead guy's back to cut the sandwich on account they forgot to bring that, too.
There were still no suspects, but with that many Elvis impersonators in one place, and all of them having never been together in costume for that long, was a recipe for disaster. Wait, I'm not finished. But the Elvis impersonator community bonded and banded together to support one another. Tensions were high. But in the middle of all the intrigue, a romance blossomed. Two of the impersonators had found comfort in each other's arms.
This female impersonator, Elvis, female Elvis impersonator, Elvis, and the Russian Elvis, Prokobi, I think his name was, they have a fling. Okay, live and be well is what I say. It's none of my business. But isn't that like Elvis kissing himself? That's kind of kinky, isn't it? He did a lot of kinky stuff, but I don't think he ever did that.
I am loving my Elvis. She exactly like Russian nesting doll. Woman inside Elvis inside woman inside Elvis. She make me feel like king. Or even better, Russian oligarch. We go back to my room to make love, but I smell smoke. It coming from next room where staying oldest impersonator Elvis Pelvis. He do impersonation even while Elvis alive. Right around time Elvis makes spin-out movie. I rush into hallway. I heard Pelvis screaming inside.
I ran out into the hall to see what was going on. A man in a cowboy hat rushes past me, headed for the elevator. He's got a blowtorch in his hand.
I tried to go into Pelvis room, but there's too much smoke. I grab Ella and we run downstairs to the hotel lobby. Big mistake. Should have put on clothes first. No place to put wallet.
There were now even more burning questions. Sorry, bad pun. But who stabbed the room service attendant in the back? And why? Was it because he forgot to bring the gravy fries along with the sandwich? And who was this mysterious cowboy who ran from the scene of the fatal fire that killed Elvis Pelvis? Could he be the murderer? Or just an itinerant welder? Tune in next time to find out the identity of the Elvis impersonator serial killer when we hear Detective Higgins say,
"What if the real Elvis is still alive? He'd be 83 years old. I wonder if he'd still be fat."
On the next Back and Hill, Dead Elvis.
Wow. Wow, the plot thickens.
Yeah.
Story just keeps getting better and better. Unlike Constantine's Russian accent. Can't wait for next week's episode to see if that gets any better. I'm kidding. Constantine's a great asset to our little comedy troupe because in addition to being a musical theater actor, he is classically trained as an opera singer. It's just a good thing there aren't any Russian operas. Want to give a little bit of a teaser for next week. Next week, our very special guest will be from the British invasion. Billy J. Kramer will be here with us next week. He's going to do a new song and also one of his old hits that was written by Lennon and McCartney. So he'll be here with us, and he's going to do a sketch with us as well. We also will have Mandy Lee Pantyhose Thompson making a return. She'll be showing you all things that you can do with Band-Aids. Let's put it to you this way. They're not just for pasties anymore. If you're looking to find us, if you want to like tell people to check us out, and you should be doing that, because let's face it, it doesn't cost anything. We're doing this for free. The least you could do is spread the word. So tell people to either watch us live on facebook.com/RobbieO Radio, or you can download or listen to us on iTunes, the OG Podcast Network, Google Play, and we're also up on YouTube. So, and check out our Twitter handle, and we have an Instagram too, Megan. No, what's the Instagram?
At Rob Bartlett Comedy Hour.
See? That's why she's the Renaissance woman. Get your own little applause break there.
Thank you.
We'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the Radio Hour with our own celebrity endorser. It's for Mutual United American Continental Lincoln Penn Burial Insurance. Hi. I'm Nicolas Cage, and I have an important message about final expense life insurance. It's not easy to talk about planning for one's own funeral, but did you know that burial costs in this country can be upwards of $35,000 or more? It's an outrage.
My dad had it all planned. There was only one thing he didn't plan. He didn't plan on dying. So when he died, every dollar of his estate went toward his funeral costs. Nothing left for me. Well, there goes my BMW that I had my eye on.
I was my dear Aunt Josephine's only heir. And after she was killed when she accidentally drove her little rascal scooter into a dairy truck, she was lactose intolerant. I couldn't believe what the lawyer told me. He said she didn't make her burial arrangements ahead of time. So I wound up with nothing, not even enough for a scratch-off.
After Mom finally died, I felt really bad. I should have seen her more. I kept meaning to, but you know, the day would just slip away from me. I'd have a luncheon with the girls, or I had to return something at the mall. And then the 3-mile drive over to see her just became impossible. But when she died, I was devastated. I thought she was going to leave me something. But after the funeral home and the flowers and the cemetery plot purchase, there was nothing left for me. I needed to go to Cabo to grieve. But there was nothing left.
If you're between the ages of 50 and 90 and are still physically capable of signing your name or a reasonable, legally acceptable replica of something that represents your name, you qualify for a whole life insurance policy, even if you have a pre-existing condition like diabetes or high blood pressure or syphilis like me.
It's easy to get coverage. You can be approved with just one phone call.
They didn't care that I had diabetes or that Stanley had high blood pressure.
You can be approved with just one phone call, even if you have hepatitis C, like me.
My wife and I had talked about not wanting to saddle our children with the burden of having to take care of our final arrangements.
We thought, we've lived our lives. Why? We don't want our kids not to enjoy theirs.
But when we read the policy, it said we could use the money for any purpose. So we said, screw them. We cashed it in, and now we're going on our second honeymoon. They can bury us in a coffee can for all we care. We'll be dead.
Mutual United American Continental Lincoln Penn Burial Insurance. Call the number on your screen right now for a free quote and receive this travel walker as our gift.
We're going to Cabo.
But what about me?
Oh, suck it, sweetie.
Not the bees. Not the bees. Not the bees! Not the bees! They're in my eyes! Not the bees! It's from Wicker Man. It's the Nicolas Cage movie. They put it like a thing on his head and they put bees in it and then they sting his eyes. What did I say before the show? Well, that's food for thought for all of us, I think. Because, you know, there's only one thing that commercial needed. A Russian accent.
Oh, come on, Rob.
I know. I'm just breaking your chops, Constantine. By the way, isn't there another nickname we could use, like Gus?
No, there are no opera singers named Gus. Gus is the guy who weighs your fish at the docks.
And he does a killer Russian accent, too.
As soon as we do a sketch that has an opera singer in
it... Well, you're in luck. Because this next sketch actually does.
Really?
Yes. Now, it's obvious to everyone that I like to eat, but... Oh, now you laugh. Where does this hostility come from? What did I ever do to you people? I give, and I give, and what do I get? I work my fingers to the bone, and all I'm left with is bony fingers. There's a trend lately in food that I'm not happy about. Bowls. Can't find a restaurant now that doesn't have these bowls. Everything's got a bowl, except pizzerias. They don't have bowls yet. But when they do have pizza in a bowl, I'm putting my head in a panini press and anything. Cereal in a bowl, I get that. Soup in a bowl makes sense to me. A time-honored tradition. But poke bowl? What the hell's a poke bowl? You gotta build it. You take a protein, you add a grain, and you add vegetables, then you add a sauce. Poke bowls, burrito bowls, acai bowl. What the hell's an acai? Sounds like a karate move. Unless it's super cereal, I don't want to eat out of a bowl. My dog eats out of a bowl. I'm not eating out of a bowl until one day I wake up and I can lick myself. That's a trade-off. Anyway, I got here early on Mondays to set up everything, and today, one of the radio stations here on the floor had an opera singer. Not famous, I don't know who it was, but he was ordering lunch. And it wasn't bowls, by the way. But it was one of the more entertaining things I've ever experienced. So here's something that we call Così Fan Tutti Deli.
All right, Tony, do you have Sharon's order? She's waiting here for her pickup. Tony! Sharon's waiting. You know what? I'll get it. Gold's Deli, we make it nice.
Is this the deli?
Yeah.
I'm so very hungry.
Saul, it's that opera singer again.
Knish made of kasha and a side of coleslaw. I think I'll die if I can't get a corned beef on rye.
Got it. So, what
I want bologna, some pepperoni, German salami, hot pastrami, brisket well done, and sandwich of tongue. I'm one hungry fella. I want mortadella.
Anything else?
Liverwurst. Liverwurst. Liverwurst, 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 liverwurst. Liverwurst.
Is that it?
2 kilogram Virginia ham would be amiss if you didn't have Swiss. Limburger cheese brings me to my knees. What might be better is very sharp cheddar. Some locusts you fried, some applesauce on the side, egg salad to scoop, and matzo ball soup, and 3 turkey club. But no discussion, you must hold the Russian.
All right. Now let me make sure that I got this over...
Liverwurst!
Okay, listen, I think you already ordered that. Or, what, do you want another sandwich?
I'll have the Kugel, I'm feeling frugal, so what I wish is give out the fish. Some turkey breast would just be the best, and I will be sharing some pickled herring, peanut butter and jelly to fill my belly. I love over a Reuben and a hot Cuban. I'll loosen my belt for a tuna melt. And don't forget the pickle, I'll tip you a nickel.
All right. Let me read this back to you so I know I got
it. Liverwurst, 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 liverwurst,
yeah,
liverwurst.
Yeah, I got it. You want liverwurst. A lot of liverwurst, all right? Now let me read this back to you. You want a corned beef on rye, a tongue sandwich, German salami, hot pastrami, well-done brisket, mortadella, Virginia ham, Swiss cheese, Limburger, sharp cheddar, potato latkes, applesauce on the side, scoop of egg salad, matzo ball soup, 3 turkey club, hold the Russian dressing, noodle, cocoa, gefilte fish, turkey breast, pickled herring, peanut butter and jelly sandwich, a Reuben sandwich, a Cuban sandwich, a tuna melt, kasha knish, side of coleslaw, and a pickle, and a buttload of...
Liverwurst, 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 liverwurst.
Anything to drink?
Diet Coke.
Ladies and gentlemen, see, you don't have to be fat to sing opera, which is a beautiful thing. Although I'm starting to think it was a mistake to get talented people to be part of this ensemble, because it's becoming less and less about me. It's called the Rob Bartley Radio Comedy Hour, but you know, all of a sudden, it's like everybody else is doing better voices than me. It's just, what's wrong with this picture? I went to the movies this past weekend, and I saw that new movie with The Rock, Skyscraper. It was great. It's very exciting. It's like Die Hard in a building. You have no idea how happy it makes me that you guys laughed at that, because I've been doing that joke for the past 3 months, ever since I saw the trailer, and nobody got it! See, because Die Hard takes place in a building, and they're always saying when they pitch a movie, it's Die Hard in a sub... Forget it. Anyway, The Rock plays this ex-FBI guy. FBI guy is an entirely different organization. He winds up as a security guard because he loses a leg in a mission, and it's all about how he saves his family from terrorists. And he's only got one leg, which is very inspiring, you know, to see someone like that rise up against adversity to become a hero. That happens every once in a while in sports. Jim Abbott, perfect example, major league pitcher, born without a right hand, played for the Yankees, pitched a no-hitter against Cleveland. Amazing. But he wasn't the first. And as a matter of fact, there's a new ESPN 30 for 30 documentary out now about a minor league baseball player who also triumphed despite a physical challenge, peg leg Stan Canfield. And to help us tell that story, making his sketch comedy debut with us this evening, please welcome once again Mr. Sid Rosenberg.
Hey there. 30 for 30.
What's that?
Pressure's on. Don't
screw this up. These are like real actors behind me, by the way. You didn't tell me this.
Well, I just...
They can sing, they can dance.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Damn. All right.
And now, ESPN's award-winning documentary series, 30 for 30.
One August Sunday in 1938, my daddy took me down to Theodore Bilbo Stadium to see Stan Canfield play. It's the first time I'd ever seen the Caledonia Salmon Flies. They had a doubleheader against the Pine Mountain Carbuncles that day. I'll never forget it. It was Pickled Egg Day. Everybody at the ballpark got a jar of pickled eggs. Stan went 4 for 5 in the first game, 9 for 7 in the second, including a play in the eighth inning when he slid into first on a stand-up double. I'd never seen anything like it. It wasn't until we were on the bus back home that Daddy told me Stan had a wooden leg.
This is Without a Leg to Stand On, the Stan Canfield story. The legend of Peg Leg Stan Canfield is one of the most little-known in sports history, but no one knows more about him and his amazing career than sportscaster and morning show host on WABC's Bernie and Sid program, Sid Rosenberg.
What can I say? Stan was spectacular. There was nobody like him, not even in the major leagues. Nobody had more hits, not Babe Ruth, not Ted Williams, not Gehrig, not George McBride. Well, everybody in baseball had more hits than George McBride. I think I couldn't hit the side of a barn with a handful of BBs.
Stan Canfield started his baseball career in 1936 in the Pioneer League as a pitcher for the Thomasville Mole Rats.
That's right. But the next year, he gets traded to the Caledonia Salmon Flies for $35, a canned ham, and a player to be named later.
My great-grandmother, Annie, dated Stan his first season with the Salmon Flies. It was pretty serious. They were talking marriage. She followed him to Tennessee, where they were supposed to play a 3-game series against the Helen Wood Tapeworms. She waited for him at the stadium, but he never showed. So she went home with the hot dog vendor.
Unbeknownst to Annie, tragedy had struck the team bus en route. Swerving to avoid an orphan with a puppy in the middle of the road, the driver lost control and drove off a cliff, killing the entire team, leaving Canfield the only survivor.
Great-grandma found out later that his right leg had been horribly mangled, and the doctors weren't able to save it. It was pretty obvious. She wouldn't be dancing at her wedding. So she went home with one of the interns, and that's how my mom was born.
You know, here's a guy with so much promise, someone who's destined to be even greater than Ty Cobb. And now he doesn't have a leg to stand on. So they fit him with a wooden leg, and then he mysteriously disappears. No one knows where he is. Meanwhile, the Salmon Flies rebuild their entire team.
But then fate stepped into the batter's box.
Dub Johnson, Cub reporter for the Caledonia Post-Dispatch. He's on vacation in Mexico. He sees this relief pitcher with a wooden leg playing for the Mexican League, the Tijuana Pendejos. And he realizes it's Stan. So he writes this article about him, Stan Canfield Can. And in it, he gives Stan the nickname Peg Leg. Not a stretch. Obviously, the guy's got a prosthetic leg, but the auto gets a lot of attention. Enough to make Selma Greenberg, who got the team in the divorce settlement from her husband, Morty, she gets Stan back to the Salmon Flies. Turns out she's got a thing for amputees, Robin.
Canfield came back to the Salmon Flies in the middle of the season and immediately became a sensation. His inspirational story of triumph over adversity and rebirth had resonated with the fans, and so when he returned, he had already become a superstar.
So his first game back is the night game against the league leaders, the Brandywine Whitefish. A win against them puts the Salmon Flies in first place. And I got to tell you, folks, Bilbo Stadium was packed.
Bilbo Stadium was packed.
I just said that, thanks. It was also asparagus night. Everybody in attendance got an asparagus dog, a stalk of steamed asparagus on a bun. I can only imagine what the bathroom smelled like that night.
By the bottom of the eighth inning, Canfield had stolen 9 bases.
So what he used to do was he would leave the wooden leg on the base, take a really big lead. Scores tied 6-6. Brandywine brings in a reliever, the great Teddy Short Pants Baxter. Strikes out the first 2 batters. Now Canfield comes up to the plate. The crowd goes wild. Stan takes 2 screamers from Short Pants. So now it's 2 out, 2 strikes. Crowd starts chanting. Sing along. Stan Can.
Stan Can. Stan Can. Stan Can. Stan Can.
Okay, that's enough facts. Stan steps out of the batter's box, takes off his wooden leg. He takes the leg and points it to the left field wall. Very Babe Ruthish. He's calling a shot with a wooden leg. See, apparently in those days, there was nothing in the rule book preventing the use of a peg leg for a bat. The place gets clearly silent, and deathly silent, too. Short Pants winds up, throws a knuckleball. Canfield hits it. You know, folks, it's still in the air today, 80 days later, probably halfway to Mars by now. He hops around the bases on one leg. Salmon Flies win the game 7-6, and they take over first place.
The Salmon Flies wound up winning the championship that year thanks to an amazing season from Canfield. Word soon spread the Yankees were going to sign him and bring him up to the majors. But during the offseason, tragedy strikes.
It's terrible tragedy. Stan comes down with the dreaded pine tar poisoning. He used to smear it on his stump to keep his wooden leg attached. You know how that goes. And he dies 2 days before Yankee spring training. Since then, fatal pine tar poisoning is known as Stan Canfield's disease. He even got a medical condition like Lou Gehrig. How about that?
On the next 30 for 30, the story of Mickey Deadeye Johnson, the man who holds the record for being hit by the most pitches in baseball history.
Spectacular! And this was way before, in the days before they wore helmets.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Sidney!
Thank you! Thank you!
Thank you. I think you have a second career here, buddy. Sit, relax, enjoy the rest of the show.
Okay, I'll see you. Bye.
We're going to bring you back later for a bow, but now just get off. Sid Rosenberg! You can catch Sid every weekday morning from 6 to 10 a.m. on the Bernie and Sid in the Morning Show with his co-host, Bernard McGurk, the great Bernie McGurk, on 77 ABC Radio. And the podcast, they have their own podcast, too, on the OG Podcast Network, along with our very fine program. And you can catch me at Catch a Rising Star in Fort River, New Jersey. Yes. I'm back on the comedy club circuit. I'll be at Catch a Rising Star in Fort River on Thursday, August 2nd. For tickets, go to catcharisingstar.com. First gig back since, well, you know. One of the great things about doing the show here at Stage 17 is that the radio studios here in New York City, they've been here since the 30s, way before Cumulus owned the stations, the golden age of radio. Back then, they were owned by the Triode Broadcasting Company. This building was known as Radio Town, but then NBC came along and was much bigger, and they called themselves Radio City, and Triode was sold, and now 80 years later, Cumulus owns them. Anyway, there's this tape library here that I was going through earlier today that's got amazing stuff, classic radio shows from those days. Shows like Heiser Beer Playhouse, Breakfast with Maxine, Dick Hurt's Private Eye, the Paper Street Soap Star Theater, and the American Dog Biscuit Radio Variety Hour starring the Carlisle Sisters, Mary, Betty, Shirley, and Bertha. They were a singing group, you know, kind of like the Andrews Sisters. And they had a couple of hits, Too Pretty to Be Smart, Throw Like a Girl, and Jitterbug Jailbait. They had a short-lived movie career during World War II. One of the movies, Foxhole Serenade, featured their biggest hit, Keep Your Hands Off the Merchandise, which was about this woman who worked at Woolworths and had a problem with her boss. They did it on the Radio Variety Hour, and so I thought we would play it for you here tonight. So take a listen.
Hiya, girls.
Hi, Mary.
What's the matter, Mary? Why so blue?
Your boss got you down again.
Does he still want you to be his sweet patootie?
He made another crack about my stems this morning.
What a crumb. I wish a man would make a crack about my pins. I spent $3 on these nylons.
I dig you, sister. My boss at the soda fountain asked me out on a date to see the Dodgers play. Turns out he just wanted to go to second base.
Wait, isn't he married? The moxie on that guy.
My boss is married, too.
Oh, well, what's a girl to do?
Been working for a month at the Five and Dime. The boss has always got his eye on my behind. Another wolf in a suit and tie. Keep your hands off the merchandise. I hustle awful hard just to earn that dough. I really need a raise, but I won't sink that low. You'll never ever get your hands off the merchandise. It's such a pity living in the city. Can't walk down the street with all the whooping and hollering. Always catcalling like a bunch of mutts.
You know what that means? That means that about does it for us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Always leave them wanting more. That's the show business axiom. I think we've worn out our welcome at this point. I'm sick of looking at you. How about that? Our program is produced by Gary Brennan and me, Rob Bartlett. Written by Andrew Smith and me, Rob Bartlett.
Y'all have a good night.